Hey there, welcome back to Proof to Product. Today's guest is Victoria Venturi, the founder and CEO of Paper Epiphanies, the coolest card store in the world. In less than a decade, Victoria has grown Paper Epiphanies from an idea into a global brand. Paper Epiphanies, which is also affectionately called PIF, opened its flagship concept store in 2021, and they are currently expanding into the aviation space. They opened their first airport boutique in the Portland International Airport earlier this year. Prior to launching PIF, Victoria was a marketing and publicity executive for over 10 years, where she wrote and launched successful campaigns for agencies and television networks and big brands, including Disney, Nickelodeon, Warner Brothers, American Idol, Glee, Hilton Hotels, and more. Victoria attended Paper Camp way back in 2014, and she was a guest on the Proof to Product podcast for episode 19 that aired in 2017. So in 2017, we caught up with what she was doing in the early days of her business. But it's been a minute. She's had a lot going on, and we had a lot to catch up on, so much so that I am breaking this interview into two parts. Today is part one. And Victoria is sharing how she moved from being a business that was driven 90% by wholesale revenue to a business driven by 90% retail revenue, and now how she's kind of navigating her way back to finding that balance. Next week on episode 372, Victoria is going to share details about opening up her store in the Portland International Airport. So definitely come back to listen to that one. Today's episode is sponsored by our Is Wholesale Right For You audio series. Many brands, myself included, jump into selling wholesale before they are ready. Like I said, I was one of them. My products were priced too high, I didn't have SKU numbers, and my wholesale terms and conditions were non-existent. Sadly, I did not make a great first impression with the stores that I was pitching. Now, if you're listening and you're thinking, oh gosh, this is me too, it's not your fault, but we do have the answers that will help you avoid these mistakes. And you can get all of them in our free wholesale audio series. That's where I'll walk you through the biggest mistakes and common questions that folks have when they're not only starting, but also scaling up wholesale. So you can get access to that at prooftoproduct.com/privatepod. This is a free on-demand audio series. You can binge it in less than an hour. And again, it's going to provide you with concrete action steps for simplifying wholesale. So get access at prooftoproduct.com/privatepod. I'm Katie Hunt, wholesale expert, business strategist, and mom of four. I'm also the host of the Proof to Product podcast. Since 2011, I've coached thousands of brands whose products can be found on the shelves of indie shops and big box stores all around the world. If you are a creative entrepreneur that makes and sells physical goods, you're in the right place. Here on Proof to Product, you'll learn new strategies for product development, sales, marketing, and more. It's like your weekly dose of business school, and we're going to help you confidently grow your revenue in your own way and at your own pace. So let's get started. Hey, Victoria, welcome back to Proof to Product.
Hey, I'm so excited to be here.
I'm thrilled to have you. You were on the show way back in 2017. I think it was episode 19. I had to ask my team to look it up because I was like, it was so long ago that we talked.
I can't believe it. Time flies.
It feels like a lifetime ago. And so much has changed in the world, in your business. And I'm just excited to catch up with you today. So thank you again for coming.
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, so catch us up. Tell us about Paper Epiphanies, what you sell, and what your primary revenue streams are currently, because this has shifted over the years. We'll talk about that too. But what are they now?
Yeah. So we just hit 10 years in business this summer, which is wild. And congrats. Thank you. We're a greeting card publisher still, first and foremost. We make all of our greeting cards in our flagship store, 100% written and created by women. And we've really shifted now into retail. We are a brick and mortar powerhouse based in Portland, Oregon. We have two concept shops. Our flagship is in Southeast Portland, and we just opened our first brick and mortar in the aviation space in Portland International Airport. And that made us the first independent greeting card publisher to open independently in a major U.S. airport. So incredible. That was exciting. And it was years in the process making for that to happen. And we were really excited to see that store open back in August.
Amazing.
My dog here at the office with me. So
no worries. We're okay for guests like that. Okay. So let's talk about the journey because you were primarily a wholesale brand. I mean, you came through Paper Camp. You were focused entirely on wholesale. Let's talk about the first shop. Like, what year did you open that shop? And like, what led to that decision to expand into brick and mortar?
Great question. So yes, we were primarily wholesale. We started our business back in 2014 and we jumped right into wholesale. So kind of went at it, you know, the back route. We started with wholesale. primarily a wholesale business. And then in 2020, when the world shut down, I was like, oh my gosh, we don't have control. And that scared me. I wanted control of my revenue streams. I wanted to be able to, I mean, obviously, government aside, I wanted to be able to open when I wanted to open. I wanted to be able to control, you know, my destiny. And people started to show up at our warehouse in Portland to buy cards.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So we saw a huge spike in our e-commerce. People were buying, sadly, mostly sympathy cards on our website. But we saw a huge spike in e-commerce. And then people were coming to our warehouse saying, hey, can we buy cards? Can we come in and buy? And I was like, well, mask up, but yeah, you can come in and shop. And then I said, okay, there's something here. Like,
yeah,
we need to be able to reach the consumer directly. So we actually signed our lease in October of 2020.
Time to do that.
people were running out and we were running in. And I said, let's do this. I was able to actually negotiate a really good deal for our retail, a 15-year lease.
Oh, wow.
Because of COVID. And I was like, well, let's take advantage of it.
Yeah.
And yeah, we moved in during COVID and opened during COVID. And to me, it was sort of like an epiphany moment. But I said, you know, for years, people have seen a portion of our brand. You know, and our brand, if you're familiar with it, is, you know, unapologetic. And it's a brand, it's a story. And to be immersed in it, there's nothing like it. And so to be able to open our store and immerse people in our brand really changed the game for us. And when we did that, it was sort of our hockey stick moment. And it really just showed me that that's really where we operate best. That's where we were meant to be operating all along. And my background is as a founder, and just my, you know, my corporate background really lended itself to marketing and PR. That's what I did for so many years that, you know, in the B2B world, I can only do so much with that experience. But in the consumer world, the sky's the limit, no pun intended. And I was really able to capitalize on that experience in the consumer world. And so retail has really been a game changer for us.
Wow. Okay. I don't know that I remember that you opened during COVID. I mean, that had its own set of unique challenges, of course, but also shifting the business model to be, okay, we're opening the brick and mortar, we're putting more of our time and energy there. You also had logistical challenges, I'm sure, like staffing and, you know, day-to-day operations changed. Like the systems you were using in wholesale probably needed to be adapted for direct-to-consumer, especially in person. Can you talk about that a little bit? Like what kind of shifts you needed to make in the operational side of things?
Yeah, great questions. I think definitely there's, you know, some of our key people that we had on the wholesale side were like, I'm never doing retail again. When I was in college, I did retail or something like that. And so there was some key people where I was like, could you do us a favor? And maybe like, you know, on Wednesdays, could you just work in the front of the store? You know, I was doing some of that, like negotiating with some of our team members, but then also just in terms of shifting our mindset. I think for a long time, what was great about having a wholesale brand is, you know, with a brand like ours, if you don't like our cards or you don't like profanity or you don't like our edginess, well, you don't buy our cards, right? It's take it or leave it kind of thing. But in a consumer environment, you get everything. You get all the feedback. You have to deal with the people.
Yep.
And I think that is a blessing and a curse. And surprisingly, we've only had, you know, a handful of Karens in the 4+ years that we've been open. But there is still that sense of we are open for business and people can come in, share their opinions and their feedback. And obviously we love our customers, but it's a whole new thing to consider to have to actually like take that into consideration. Not that we don't with wholesale and obviously we value our wholesale customers and our clients, but it's just a different level of exposure to public feedback.
It's a different engagement process too, totally. Right? Like, absolutely. And you've now seen both sides of it because you've sold wholesale. Now you're a retail shop. So your interactions with other wholesale brands you're buying from or working with, I don't want to say is transactional because there's very much a relationship side of the B2B world and the wholesale world. Like we buy from who we know, who we know can deliver quality product, all that. But also a lot of the B2B decisions are like, what are my profit margins going to be? What do I have shelf space for? Yeah. What's my turns? All these things. Whereas the general consumer coming in, they're thinking about who they're gifting that item to or how they're buying it for themselves. Like they're going to share their opinions with you about what they think, what they liked, what they don't like, all of those things. You're absolutely right. It's a different connection point.
Absolutely. And it's been interesting, actually. I have found business, like the few times I've been, I haven't done many wholesale shows since we've opened our brick and mortars, but
you've been a little busy.
Yes, exactly. When I'm there, I actually find it more successful. Buyers are interacting with me in a different way. They trust me more. It's like they know that I own a store. They aren't afraid to give me feedback in a real way that I was never able to get from them when I just was making cards or just, mm-hmm. just a maker. And I don't mean that in a negative way. I just mean, it's like this sense of like, I'm in the club now or something. And they're like, I can tell you that like this card was shit or like, can tell you this card was great. Or what else is selling for you? Let's talk shop. Like, give me some insight, give me some tips. And like, I really feel like I've been let into this other world, which I do think when we decide to go back in and earn to wholesale, which we plan to do, I'll be able to capitalize on that in a way that just kind of gives us a sense of, you know, honestly, trust with our buyers, because people know we're not trying to pull the wool over their eyes. Like, give us the honesty. Is this card not moving for you? Well, have you tried it in this space? Have you moved it to me? Or have you done this? Or here's what we do in our stores and here's what works for us. And actually, let's be honest. We made this card. We put it in our store. It didn't sell. Let's pull it off the shelf
for you. Let's pull it. Yeah.
Stuff like that. And I think a lot of stuff, I remember when I first started making cards, people would ask me like, do you have a card that just says Happy Mother's Day? And I remember being like quasi offended by this question as a card publisher. And I was like, I don't. Like, who wants a card that just says Happy Mother's Day? Like, it's not like authentic. It doesn't speak to the relationship. Like, we don't make that card. Mm-hmm. If I don't get asked for that card 50,000 times every Mother's Day, I make it in like 5 different styles now. And it's like, I get it now. Like, it's for the son who comes in, who has a strained relationship with his mother, or he doesn't know what to say to his mom or his mother-in-law. And he just wants a card that just says Happy Mother's Day.
Yeah.
And buyers need that card. And like, I need that card and I own a store. And now granted, I make it like look cool and the font's edgy and it's letterpress and it's still like piff, but we make that card. And so like, there's some of those things that I've learned over the years as a buyer that like, when the buyer is asking you this request, it's not like a slight or like saying that you have a gap in your line. It's just, they just have this need that they need. And if you can fill it, they're going to buy it from you. Right. And if you can't fill it, they're not going to buy it from you. And they're going to go on to somebody else who has it.
I love that you're saying this because we're recording this in October. I'm hearing from a lot of folks who are like, oh, sales on the wholesale side are slow. And we haven't seen the like winter, like holiday orders coming through that we typically see at this point. And they're, I'm generalizing here, okay?
So I still have to buy holiday for an airport, so don't worry.
Thank you for reassuring the listeners. But secondly to this, I think, and I'm generalizing here, that a lot of brands are going into spirals of like, nobody likes me, everybody hates me, like my product sucks. And I'm like, hold your horses. No, it doesn't. And so to your point, like the feedback we're getting, one, I love that you're more in conversation with these other stores and also taking this feedback now from a different perspective as a brand. But secondly, I think it's important to amplify this for other brands that are listening that like, hey, if people are asking for stuff, it's just because they have a need. They're not demanding you make it. They're not like criticizing your line. They're just stating, this is what I need.
Totally. Yeah. And like sometimes we all have people come into our store too. And there's sometimes there's stuff that you just know doesn't fit, which is a different example. Like, we had someone come in, they were like, I want, you know, campfire cards that my kid can send from camp. And I was like, get out.
Not us. Yeah. Not us.
Leave. You know, no, but like that will never be Piff. Like we'll never be the come here to buy cards for your kids to send from the campfire. Like we just won't carry that. It's just not our brand. I can send you to Ecru. I can tell you where to get them in the city. And I do. And I love those stores and they do carry some of our line. And there's amazing spots to get campfire cards for your kids. It's not here.
Mm-hmm. Right. And that's okay. Knowing that about your brand is
totally
what we all need to do.
Goes both ways. Like, yes, we do need to make cards that just say Happy Mother's Day. No, we are not going to carry campfire cards. Like, finding that balance and like knowing the difference between like a need that you could fill in a way that's still on brand for you and something that's just never going to align with your brand story. And so, like, I think owning a brick and mortar has like just been like a masterclass in that, you know, that difference, those two differences. And yeah, just for me, like really inspiring and exciting as a founder to like find, I think for a long time, I was struggling in just having a wholesale business because my gifts and my skill set is in B2C. And I think a lot of people are like sales mavens. Like they, that's what they do. That's what they thrive in. They're like shooter. Like I, you know, I could just, and like, that's not my skill set. I can sell because if I believe in something, but that's not what my passion is. My passion is in storytelling and brand building. And that's what I do. And that's what I've done with Piff. And I think finally now we've found our path with retail.
Yeah. I want to talk about the PDX store in a minute, but I also want to talk real briefly about, I want to compliment you because you have done an excellent job of focusing on one thing at a time in the building process, meaning you built the wholesale line, you built that strong, you built the systems and processes there. Then you opened your retail shop and you did turn your time and attention to that retail shop to really build that up. Now you've gone to the airport shop, which you're building up, but you've diversified, but you've also very intentionally focused on one thing at a time along the way and given it enough time and attention that it could become something. And I'm seeing a lot of folks who are spreading themselves too thin, not giving things enough time to flourish, and then kind of giving up on it, so to speak. And I feel like you seem to have gone into this with a very clear idea of, okay, I've spent time building wholesale. Now I'm going to turn to our first brick and mortar shop. Now I'm looking at other opportunities like what you did with the airport. And so it's like a really nice hybrid of diversification, but also focused intention. And so I want to give you kudos for that. But also, how do you balance all of that?
Thank you for that compliment. I think it's a combination of intentionality and also necessity. One, you have spoken and had a great quote about pouring water into different cups, right? So props to you on that. You know, you only have one cup of water. You can only pour it so many places. And so that really resonated with me a few years ago, that analogy. But I think for me, a lot of it started with capital requirements, right? Like I only had so much money and I didn't want to take on a ton of debt. I still wanted to be able to like have a home, feed my kids. And so I was like, well, I can't do trade shows and have a store. And, you know, product development is an area, for example, in my business that I don't want to say I'm not proud of, but I know that we could have more products. I just don't have the money. Mm-hmm. That's an honest answer. Like I have a bazillion ideas, but I could take on a ton of debt, put my business at risk and go out and make all those products that we are planning to make. But it would not be good for the health of my business.
But I also want to interject here and say, you don't have the capital to do that because you've intentionally decided to put it elsewhere in the business.
Correct. Thank you. Okay. Yes. Correct. I could have put it somewhere else. I chose to put it somewhere else. But
yeah.
Some people maybe do it all at once to your point, and then your business can be at risk. And so, you know, we've done things one at a time, but when you do that, like to your point, like when we decided to move our attention to retail, when we decided to do that, wholesale went down, you know,
because
we weren't doing shows. I mean, it's imped along. I mean, it's still there. And the nice part about it is because we have the processes and the experience in place, when we're ready to water it again, it will grow.
Yeah. The foundation is there.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And so that is nice. Although like, you know, as an impatient founder, you're like looking at it, like, let's water it. Like, let's go, let's do shows. And
I want to do it all. I get it.
It can be frustrating. I recently brought my husband into the company, which is going to be a whole other podcast.
Yeah.
His background is in sales. So I'm excited to, when we are watering that side of the company again, to let him run with that, because that is really in his wheelhouse of skill sets. But back to your question of balancing it all, I think it's really in a matter of kind of taking it one step at a time, trying to not be too impatient. I think the years of planting seeds can be challenging, especially when you are aware of the industry, when you're watching peers, when you have that FOMO, when you're watching people do shows, when you're watching people bring things to market. That type of feeling can be frustrating, especially when you're building and when you're doing something great. I moved to LA back in 2007 to be a stand-up comedian. And there was an example that people used to use for the acting industry. And they would say an overnight success has usually been acting somewhere between 7 and 10 years.
Right.
An actor that you see like, you know, pop out of nowhere has probably been consistently working for a decade before you see them explode. And I think that's a great example for any industry, like somebody like mine who opens in an airport, right? I've been grinding for a decade to get to that place. And I think it's really great reminder for all of us in the industry. People have been planting a lot of seeds, whether that's in wholesale or retail or product development. And when you see somebody have a success, like cheer for them because they've probably been working and planting seeds for so long to have that moment. And I just think, you know, like, I think we cheer a lot for our industry and we say like, oh, it's such a positive industry and, you know, our peers are great and they are, but there's still this sense of like comparison and who's doing what and, you know, why am I not there? And I think if we could all just think about those seeds, the planting of the seeds and knowing that all of us are trying to do that and kind of focusing on our own moments. Like, I think that's been helpful for me to know like, okay, that journal that she just made took her fucking 15 months, you know, and like, she's been working on that and like, good for her or like, whatever it is. Like, I think we could all
use those reminders.
Totally. 100%. I was just talking with somebody the other day about the social media effect of like the transparency of being able to see what everyone else is doing and how wonderful that is, because we can lift them up and we can cheer them on. But it does create that mental health battle too of like, oh my gosh, why am I not there yet? Or FOMO when we see people posting their trade show booths or, you know, whatever it might be, or somebody posting like their palette of product going out to a key account that, you know, maybe I've been trying to get into or whatever. And again, they should be sharing because we're so proud of them too. But at the same time, it does create, you know, these fraudy feelings within ourselves a little bit.
Exactly. I mean, there's the smoke and mirror effect. Like everyone's like, do we all want to show up, compare our P&Ls? Like, I'm sorry, when you get to a level, whatever level you want to call it, I'm not like, this is not a humility thing, but it's like, do you want to see my fucking payroll? Cause like we like moving from, you know, my one store to my airport store. Now it's like a keel over. Like,
yeah,
you know, it's like, and then what is your gross revenue versus your gross margin? And you get into your numbers and like, okay, you hit a million, but then like, what are you actually spending to get to a million? We can get into all those numbers and like
100%.
I just think, you know, comparison is the thief of joy. And I think, I don't know. I just think if we actually all got into our numbers, people would be shocked by how much people are actually making, mm-hmm. what they're actually taking home, if they're even paying themselves, what their payroll is.
Oh yeah.
And what it means to them. Like for years, I didn't even pay myself because I had kids and I'd rather hire someone to work and help me so I could be with my children versus paying myself more. Yes. That was a choice. And that was a luxury because I had a husband who worked outside the home.
Mm-hmm.
Now he's working with us. We're all in. It's terrifying, but worth it. And we're sacrificing in other ways, right? So there's mm-hmm. all kinds of optics that people don't see. And we don't talk about those optics. We're just like, oh, they're winning. How are they winning? What access to capital do they have? Right? How are they building that trade show booth? Are they independently wealthy? Did someone invest in their business? Because we're not talking about that.
No.
The person in the 4x4 booth did it all on her own. And that's way more admirable than the person in the 20x20 whose grandparents paid for the whole booth. Let's have those conversations because that gets me excited.
Yeah, for sure. Two things come to mind as I'm listening to you talk it. One, every business is different, right? What everyone is working towards is very different. Everyone's life circumstances and unique, how much money they have, what support they have, whether they have children or not, whether they're support caregivers for, you know, parents, loved ones, pets. I don't, you know, there's so many different factors that go into this. And I 100% agree with you. Like, let's look at the numbers. There's a lot of people out there touting, I'm making millions of dollars, but really what's their profit there? What are they bringing home? And so exactly. I appreciate your transparency in talking about that. I also appreciate you talking about like, we've made personal choices in our business to adapt to our life circumstances. I have done the same. And I stayed in overlap with my corporate job for about 4 years where I had both Kelp Designs and Proof to Product because I also had two babies at home, you know, like, and we were trying to make it all work financially. So I think it is important that we talk about these choices we've made. A lot of people don't because maybe they feel a little bit insecure about it or they just
totally
it's personal. So they just don't want to share it. But thank you for sharing and bringing this to light.
Totally. I think it makes people just it makes it more achievable or more honest. And I think when we don't have those conversations, it just makes people feel more isolated in their own world.
Yep.
And I think, you know, in the Artisan Residency program that we have through PIF, a lot of these conversations come up with women, you know, like, you know, I can't do this right now because I have this child. Well, okay, let's talk about the cans. Like, how can we structure this so it's successful for you? And what does that look like? And can you do it now? And then when your kid goes to kindergarten, can we structure it out in phases, right? So that it's kind of stacked.
Yeah.
You know, our business growth has kind of mimicked that for me. You know, my kids are now 7 and going to be 4. And I'm excited for that next phase of parenthood where I'm like, all right, let's do this. Like you're going to be in kindergarten and let's rock it. I'm excited for that next phase. So
yeah. For sure. And I think too, one of the other things I just want to point out to our listeners, and then I really do want to hop into this whole PDX topic, is everyone needs to know what they're working towards. And by that, I mean, what is the financial goal? What is your enough number? Like, this is the number I need to live a good, happy, healthy life. And let's work towards that number rather than some arbitrary, I need to be a 6 or 7 figure business. You know, like I really want to encourage our listeners right now, like figure out what you need to live that good life and just build the plan, the strategy plan to make that happen. And you will, as Victoria's been talking about, you're going to have to make some tough decisions along the way. But if you can get to that specific number that's going to give you a good life, you don't have to worry about the rest. You don't have to like keep working towards an arbitrary number that others say you should be working towards. So my little pep talk there. Smart and savvy are two words that I would definitely use to describe Victoria. She's done an incredible job of thoughtfully and strategically growing the Paper Epiphanies brand. And it was so fun to catch up with her today. Join the two of us again next week for episode 372. Victoria is going to give us a scoop on opening up her store in the Portland International Airport. We're talking process, logistics, timing, challenges, and her favorite thing about having a shop. Before I sign off, though, if you are looking for more wholesale resources, I want to invite you to go to proof2product.com/courses. We have a number of free and lower priced products like our 3 Secrets to Maximizing Your Trade Show Investment class, which will help you keep wholesale orders coming in long after your trade show ends. Or you can get the Unlock Buyer interview series, which will shed more light on how wholesale buyers are purchasing these days, including their preferences, the buying cycles, and all of that fun stuff. Again, you can find all of that at proof2product.com/courses. Thanks so much for listening until the end. I'll be back soon with a new episode.